Welcome to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. Thanks for listening this week and supporting public media. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, this Thanksgiving holiday, Tom, like everything else, it's been marked by the ongoing challenges of the coronavirus pandemic. Did you enjoy Turkey Thursday? We hope you had a good time with your loved ones. But of course, families have been strongly encouraged not to travel this year to see their relatives and to keep those holiday dinners really small with just your immediate family or what public health experts call your pod. For weeks now, public health officials, epidemiologists, everyone who's been tracking the spread of this disease, they have been practically begging us to stay put this year. And of course, the reason is to keep the transmission of COVID down as much as we possibly can.
Stay in your bubble is the warning from public health officials this holiday. But you know, Melissa, many are not heeding that warning. According to AAA, over 2.5 million Floridians are expected to hit the road at some point during this holiday weekend. Despite the travel warning, thousands of college students across the state and across the nation headed out for Turkey at Home this week, understandably leaving campus after the semester. All of this has sparked some concern about that travel spreading the disease, both spreading that disease around the state of Florida as well as around the nation.
Now, keep in mind, most schools are going to be virtual after this Thanksgiving weekend, and there has been COVID testing on campus for kids planning to head out and visit their parents or others. But it got us to wondering, how does the vector of college students on the move this Thanksgiving impact the pandemic? Is the COVID testing on campus enough to stop the spread? I spoke about all of this with Andrew Atterbury. He covers education for Politico Florida. Take a listen. Hi, Andrew. Thanks so much for being with us.
Sure. Happy to be here.
So Thanksgiving really has complicated family gatherings if you have a college student coming home to enjoy some turkey with mom and dad. What are you hearing from Florida's universities about what they advised students to do this week?
Sure. Well, it seems like the message from the top has been, if you don't have to go home, don't. But at the same time, schools are offering tests to students so they can get the coronavirus tested before they go home and see if they have it. Of course, that's not mandatory or anything, so it's more of just an idea that they have. And of course, one thing they're also worried about is, you know, when are they going to come back from home? And could they bring the coronavirus back with them whenever they do come back to their either their dorm or their apartment or house at their university?
Yeah. And so universities have been taking that into account across Florida and essentially putting classes back online after Thanksgiving, correct?
Right. So it's pretty much, this pretty much is the home stretch. If we look at it from that angle, the semester is essentially over for at least most of campus life. It's hard to find exactly how many classes are could still be going on. There might be some labs and things, but even final exams are being encouraged to take place online after Thanksgiving.
Right. Whether you're talking University of Florida, Florida State, USF, UM, all going online after Thanksgiving. And it's no surprise when you consider that at least 80 deaths have been reported at colleges and universities since the pandemic began, and hundreds of thousands of cases of coronavirus. It's been really challenging, hasn't it, for Florida's campuses to deal with this?
It has, but at the same time, it seems like the universities feel like they have sort of reached a light at the end of the tunnel with this semester. Although there have been a lot of cases, and some of these bigger universities, they've definitely piled up. Somehow the positivity rate has been pretty good. It seems, you know, with some of these schools, the positivity rate is below 5%. Their quarantine dorms still have a lot of space. And that's a big key there is the students who are having quarantine in the dorms, they have somewhere where they can go and they're not spreading the virus around. Those are still low. And with the semester almost over, it's like, okay, they have survived here a little bit. But then it's almost like it's starting right back over with, okay, so they've got to send kids home for Thanksgiving. The kids are going to be coming back, and then soon enough, the spring's going to be here again. And what we saw in the fall is the big spike in cases is when folks first start showing up for classes, right? Like in September is where we saw the big surge of COVID cases, and it has since leveled out. So it seems like that's kind of what they're trying to avoid here in the future is another one of those.
Right, planning ahead. I mean, spring break has been canceled at the University of Florida already. So they're trying to tamp down on kids traveling in the spring, getting infected, then coming back to campus. There's so many contingencies that universities and colleges have to look at going beyond this Thanksgiving holiday. What else are college administrators and the students, what else are they saying to you about how to get through this next phase?
Well, one thing that schools are starting to do now is they're setting up mandatory testing policies. The University of Florida, for instance, everyone in the spring, whether if you live in a dorm or if you're in a sorority fraternity or you're in in-person classes, they're going to require saliva tests beginning of the semester and then every 2 weeks after that as well. And it sounds like other schools are following suit. So there's going to be a lot. It seems like even though there's been a ton of testing now, it seems like mandatory testing is the policy now that folks are going to try to use to mitigate the coronavirus cases next semester.
You're right, because as you said, students are being encouraged to get a test before they go home for the Thanksgiving holiday, but it's not mandatory. Kids are on the honor system, essentially. Students are going to head home for the holiday, thousands of them, leaving Florida for parts unknown. Some live in state, some will be going across the country.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is it's really hard to tell where everyone's going to go, and it's going to be different for every school as well. Like, if you look at a school like FIU at Florida International in Miami, it's going to be a lot different there because Miami's been dealing with the brunt of this outbreak since it started. It's always been, it seems to be a little bit worse in Southern Florida. So a school like that, you know, they're going to have even more challenges. They're going to have, they also have fewer students in their dorms too. So that's a really unique case down there.
Yeah. And then, you know, Andrew, once we get through this whole ordeal, the pandemic has changed so many institutions of American life. That includes higher education. Campuses have figured out how to do remote learning. Do you anticipate that colleges will embrace, you know, the typical campus experience once we get through this? Or is that typical on-campus experience going to look different? Will there be fewer students that want that experience once this pandemic is over or not?
Universities are sure hoping that students want to return to campus life. And it seems like that's the case. You talk to a lot of people and it seems to be that they're making it through this, but the aspect of campus life, students are really missing that. You know, intramural sports, their organizations, their clubs, you just can't do everything you want to do now. And the thought is that, of course, that might actually affect enrollment here in the end. And in Florida now, they're already seeing fewer applications for the fall semester, according to the university system leaders. And that could be for a variety of reasons. One of the big reasons they think is because Florida is one of the few states where the universities are still requiring SAT and ACT entrance exams for admittance, because other states are throwing those policies away for at least a year because of the coronavirus. And some of the university leaders here think, hey, maybe students are looking at other states because they don't have to worry about taking these exams. Or if they don't like their score, they can just apply somewhere else and not have to worry about it. So that could be one factor there too as well.
What a year we've been through, and we're not done with the year yet, but it's always good to get your insights about education. He's Andrew Atterbury. He covers education for Politico here in Florida. Andrew, thanks so much for being with us.
Sure. Thanks for having me on.
The pandemic, you know, Melissa, has also impacted sports across Florida. At the high school level, the college level, pro teams, games have been canceled or postponed. Teams have struggled to have a season at all during this pandemic. And it's even the youngest athletes. I'll share with you that my middle schooler hasn't played organized soccer since before March because of concern around spreading the disease. We play some tennis, but you can easily socially distance during tennis. But we've kept him out of organized soccer out of concern over the virus.
It's really incredible the impact the pandemic has had on sports. You see NFL players now being forced to wear masks on the sidelines. What's going on with college sports, such a big part of the culture in Florida? Can sports return to normal at all next year? What can we expect out of the next seasons? Well, we decided to speak to two analysts about this. We talked all about sports, high school, college, and pro with Cole Pepper of WJXT in Jacksonville and WJCT reporter Sky LeBron. They had a lot to say. Take a listen. Cole, Sky, good to have you on the show. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much.
Cole, let's start with you. You cover sports every single day. You've watched how the pandemic has upended so much in the way of college and professional sports. Let's begin in Jacksonville, where you cover University of North Florida and other sports. What's happening in North Florida? How is the pandemic changing things?
Well, if you're talking strictly about college sports, you know, basketball is sort of just about ready to get started. So we'll see how that is affected. In terms of college football, there was plenty that was impacted this year. Some schools didn't think they would play at all, and then some conferences backtracked. Conferences like the SEC, where Florida and Georgia play, and the ACC, where Florida State plays, didn't jump the gun quite as much. They've played a limited schedule, the SEC playing only conference games, and the ACC playing only conference games plus one. So it certainly has forced adaptability to be high on the requirement list for anybody who's involved in running these sports, coaching, and playing. And just about every team has had some kind of schedule adaptation after the season has begun based on either somebody in their team or other teams having positive tests and contact tracing showing that they couldn't have a certain number of players or there was a risk. So they have tried to pull it off as best they can. And I think whether you're talking about the NFL or college football or even the high school level, we've probably learned quite a bit about how the virus transmits or doesn't based on what's happened with these large gatherings, even if they're limited in size from what we're used to seeing.
Yeah. Sky LeBron, sports has taught us a lot about how this pandemic spreads and what we need to do to try to mitigate it. You've been looking into this too in terms of teams that like to come down to Florida in the wintertime, beginning with the Toronto Raptors. What are you finding out?
Yeah, so the Raptors just announced that they are going to begin their season in Toronto, the NBA franchise, of course, or excuse me, in Tampa.
In Tampa, yeah.
So that is a big change just because the Canada is not allowing them to start their season. Apart from that, I mean, I had the privilege of talking to former University of Florida head coach Billy Donovan about how he kind of saw things transform at the very beginning of the virus. If you guys remember, early on, the NBA was one of the first large sports leagues to get hit really hard, and he was coaching the game where a player actually tested positive, and he just talked about how crazy things got in such a quick period of time and how they had to quickly pivot in order to save the season. Obviously, we saw the playoffs, we saw things happen after that, but things have been drastically changed. And just going to basketball now, as college basketball is going to be starting back up this week, we've already seen huge implications of COVID-19 in it. The University of Florida already canceled their first two games of the season. We're seeing Tennessee, is their head coach just tested positive. DePaul, University of Miami, they've all had to push back when they're going to start their season. So what Cole said is 100% correct. We're learning a lot about how even with smaller teams, the implications are huge for COVID-19. It's so easily spreadable when you're in these groups and you have to practice, you have to do these different things.
Exactly, Cole. I mean, these athletes have to get into contact with each other. And, you know, I guess you could say it's an accomplishment that they've been able to salvage seasons at all, really.
Yeah, so far, when you talk about MLS, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, so far the NFL, all these professional leagues have been able to play their seasons with some changes, obviously. One of the things, though, that I'm going to be very interested to follow is as college basketball season gets going, I think the way that college basketball handles things is going to be a different sort of set of criteria. Number one, because you do have players who are unmasked. You can't play while masked, really, and around and they're inside and so forth. The exposure by the players and coaches is one thing. To me, though, the bigger question here is how are they going to handle crowds? You have a lot of places they're going to have, you know, a vastly minimized capacities indoors. And yet still we know from what we know so far of the science, it changes quite often, that the ability to transmit inside an extended period of time when you're, even if you're somewhat socially distanced, it's much more likely to be spread indoors than it is outdoors. So as we get into the college basketball season, in whether it's a smaller gym like you might have at Jacksonville University, or if it's a, you know, a big gym like you might have at the University of Florida, how the virus transmits within the you know, the fan base is going to be very interesting to follow. There has been quite a bit of talk about how they're going to handle the tournament. They're talking about having it just in one site, perhaps Indianapolis, where the NCAA is headquartered. Once you get to the postseason, that would help to run it in a bubble, as some of these other leagues have. But my concern is what happens between now and the time you get into a bubble, because as we found with college football, college campuses are very difficult to insulate from themselves and the outside world.
That's right, Sky. And we're heading into what all public health experts say is going to be a really challenging winter with this virus before a vaccine is widely available. College sports, pro sports, big business in Florida, in this country. How the pandemic is affecting this world, I think we haven't even fully seen the long-term impacts of how this is going to affect the world of sports.
Yeah, and the economic impact is enormous for that. We've already seen the SEC with multiple games being canceled about a week ago. I believe there were 7 total games and 4 of them got postponed. This past week, we saw another game postponed as well. And the economic impact, they're trying to postpone these games so that they can be played later, but you never know if there could be another outbreak, something that has to cancel these games altogether, which we've seen other conferences do. The Pac-12 has had to do it. The Big Ten has already had to cancel games. And the economic implications of that are, they're going to be felt, and it's not just going to be this season. It's going to be going forward with the program as you're trying to build it up. It's going to be a bit tougher when you had 2 of your games canceled due to COVID. So I think we're going to see the impacts of this over the course of the next 5 to 10 years, of how this is impacting their programs, recruiting process, how it's impacting sales, and how many, you know, things that they can bring in, new aspects. And that's how you remain on top of recruiting, is enticing players with new programs, things like that. It's going to be a long haul for some of these programs that are even smaller than your UFs or your large programs like that.
Right. And so, Cole, what is there a silver lining for these programs as they try to get on the other side of this whole challenging era we're in?
Well, I think the silver lining, not just for high school or for rather for college football or college athletics programs, but for everybody in sports, is that we have been forced to find new ways to do things. Some of those new processes are going to remain beyond the pandemic, beyond vaccines and so forth. And I think it will, in some regards, streamline things. But you're talking about the economic impact. You know, Major League Baseball is likely to have lost over $1 billion by having only 60 games played in the regular season instead of 162, and by not having fans in the stands. And the impact is real when you talk about how much money college football brings in, particularly for the top 30 or 40 programs in the country. They are bringing in so much money that it's largely subsidizing the rest of the athletic department. So I think we're likely to see, as we have already in a number of professional sports industries, I think you're going to see some significant cuts moving forward in a number of the high to mid-sized college football programs and the athletic departments they're associated with.
So good to get both of your insights. Cole Pepper of WJXT, Channel 4 in Jacksonville, and our own Sky LeBron of WJCT. Thanks, guys.
Appreciate it.
Thanks, Melissa.
Still to come on the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio, why the Sunshine State could see fewer snowbirds from Canada this winter. You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup. Thanks for being with us on this Friday. I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville.
And I'm Tom Hudson in Miami. Despite the warning from the Centers for Disease Control not to travel for Thanksgiving, this week more people went through airport security checkpoints nationwide since the pandemic began in March.
That's right. Now, travel is an important part of Florida's economy, especially those winter snowbirds who come down here escaping the cold and the snow up north. This winter, though, Florida likely will see fewer Canadians coming to the Sunshine State, and that's because of travel restrictions.
We spoke with NPR national correspondent Greg Allen in Miami. Greg, welcome to the Florida Roundup. You know, if this were a normal year, what would it look like for Canadians coming to Florida here right after Thanksgiving?
Well, you know, here in South Florida, from Palm Beach down to Miami and on the Gulf Coast, there's a lot of Canadians who come down. And what I've understood from talking to people over the years is that for a lot of people, it's the road trip. They either pack up their RV or their cars, and they drive all the way down. And that's been an important part for Canadians, that they like to make drive south to Florida, and then they have their vehicle here. But we have so many Canadians who come here, tens of thousands. I've seen the Canadian government say some 300,000 Canadian snowbirds travel south every year around this time of year, typically.
Yeah, it's not a rare sighting to see an Ontario license plate going across Alligator Alley, for instance, in February and March. So what is it going to look like this year?
Well, the problem for Canadians is, of course, is COVID-19. And the fact that the United States has had a much worse outbreak here than they've had in Canada. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has told people that they absolutely should stay home this year. And the Canadian government has put out guidelines for older Canadians, and that, of course, a lot of the snowbirds are people who are retirees, so they are older, over 65. They're saying that you absolutely should stay home. And to kind of hammer that fact home, the border has been closed between the U.S. and Canada, the land border, since March. It's closed to all but essential travel. So if you're a trucker, you have some kind of business back and forth, you can probably do it, but not for travelers, not for tourism. And so that's been a real problem for Canadians who want to drive south here and cannot cross the border.
We saw how this is impacting even the National Basketball Association, with the Toronto Raptors not able to go back and forth to play home games and then come travel the United States in the upcoming NBA season, instead having to relocate to Tampa to play within the United States.
Right. That's going to be a great boon for people in Tampa. I don't know if they'll be able to see him in person, but maybe in the grocery store you'll see a Toronto Raptor player. I don't know how that's
that
going
is
to
true.
Work out.
Yeah. So with that land border closed, with the Ontario RVs parked in Ontario or wherever they may be in Canada, are Canadian snowbirds still able to come to Florida this year?
Well, yes, of course, you can still fly. And there's been some criticism that people say if you're really serious about closing the border, you should stop non-essential travel by flying. But a lot of people feel that it was a sop to Air Canada, or just trying to take care of the airlines who are suffering enough already that you didn't want to cut off all their travel. So Canadians can fly to the U.S. So you can fly if you want, but you don't have your car. But the other issue, which is actually, I think, the bigger one, is that you have to have health insurance if you're Canadian and you come here in any case. Their Canadians' health insurance doesn't work here, their nationalized health insurance. So they have to take out a special policy when they come to Florida, which people routinely have done for years. This year, it became much more difficult with COVID-19. The health insurance companies at first weren't sure what kind of policy they could offer. And now there is policies that are available. I understand they're very pricey, might be as much as your original policy. The health concerns added to the insurance concerns added to the border closure has really discouraged people. And that's why I think if you're seeing at least half of the Canadian snowbirds this year are staying home, maybe more.
So there are still some of those snowbirds, though, that will be flying or trying to drive south for the winter. Tell us the story of the Roods.
Right. Well, where there's a will, there's a way. And I think, we're in Florida. We know the how nice it is here when you get to, December, January, February. And, we take it for granted, of course. But I think no one appreciates it more than someone who lives, north of Toronto or in Quebec, and is looking at feet and feet of snow. And so what's happened is that as people have gotten desperate, some people will fly and rent a car. And one thing we should point out is a lot of these Canadian snowbirds we're talking about own property in Florida, right? These are people who have investment, who has vacation properties here, or they rent, or they bring their RV. So there's a fellow who works for a helicopter company that does helicopter business up near Toronto. Jeremy Rood, his name is, and his parents were complaining to him about not being able to go to Florida because the problem is they can't get their vehicle over the border, because the land border is closed. And so he said, well, that's no problem. What I can do is I can give you a ride in my helicopter. Our helicopter service will fly across the border. I have my friend who has a trucking company. He'll load your vehicle onto a flatbed truck, and we'll just take your car over the border, and then we'll meet just over the border, and we'll put the helicopter down at the local airport. And I forget, I think it was Plattsburgh, New York, or somewhere like that. And then you just switch and take your car. And they did that. I saw recently that he's had at least 30 customers do the same thing. It costs about $2,000, the combination of the helicopter travel and then having your car shipped by truck, like a freight vehicle.
You really have got to hate snow to take that on.
I know. And you know, the one person in the story, when Jeremy Rue was talking about someone to give a ride to, and they said, well, we thought about the health risk and we've heard what the prime minister said, but you know, they say that, you know, living in warm weather can add 10 years to your lives. And so, you know, we're in those extra 10 years we've had by going to Florida right now. So we say, we've got to go to Florida. So they're doing it. And I have seen that other companies now are doing the same thing, taking your car across the border for you and flying you by plane or by helicopter in. So it's actually kind of spreading. We'll see how many people can do it. It can cost us, you know, a couple $1,000s to go that way.
How significant are Canadians to the tourism season here in Florida? And we know how, you know, international tourism business is all but shut down because of COVID and has been for months upon months.
I don't think you're talking about a hotel business so much, although I guess there are some, you know, who have long-term like hotel rooms. It's just in certain situations, but it's all the other things too. You know, when you go to Hallandale, that area, you go through parking lots there, and I've done this, and you'll just see one Quebec plate after another. And I understand over on the Gulf Coast, over like Bonita Springs, Cape Coral, it's the same thing. It's Ontario plates there more, although they say they get a fair amount of Quebecois over there as well. But still, there's that split. And what I understand from some RV parks, talking to people on both coasts, is that, yes, they really miss their Canadian long-term visitors who come in and stay for the season. So if you have an RV park, someone comes in and books it for 3 months or 4 months at a time. Now they don't have those long-term bookings. They say there actually is a lot of people from elsewhere in this country coming in this time of year. We've seen a lot of kind of a new kind of snowbird in Florida. I've been hearing about these younger people who might be working over remotely, and they realize they can do it from anywhere. So if they've got the wherewithal, they're going and doing it other places like Florida. And so they're seeing some of those in the RV parks, people who are coming in, but they say they're more short term. They don't have the same kind of, you know, lengthy stays. So they're taking a hit that way. And you're seeing it in restaurants and of course hotels and motels as well. So it's taking a toll on everyone here in Florida.
Greg Allen, national correspondent for NPR based in Miami. Thanks, Greg.
You're welcome.
While there are a lot more empty hotel rooms now compared to last Thanksgiving, more guests have been traveling and booking overnight stays.
WLRN's Katie Swatowski-Munoz spoke with one motel owner in Broward County who has relied on Canadian visitors for years. Katie, who did you talk to?
Richard Clavey kind of owns a Richards Motel empire. He's got Richards Pet Friendly Motel, Richards Hotel, Richards Motel Studios in Hollywood. And so it's this old-timey, kind of like the old Florida postcards, these little idyllic motels.
You first met him a year ago during the holidays. What was the motel like then? And what was it like when you returned earlier this week?
Yeah, I first met him to profile some of these Quebecois, these French Canadians that were coming every single year they were returning to do the holidays at Richard's Motel. And so there was lots of singing, French Christmas carols. There was probably close to 100 people, you know, doing an outdoor cocktail party. And this year when I went back, there was only one woman there from Quebec. And it was kind of like a ghost town. It was so quiet and a little eerie and just certainly not like this time last year when his season was booming and it was his best season yet. So he really has been through quite an interesting business experience through this pandemic, especially since he caters to these French Canadians. And he really tells us what it's been like this year.
I came here in 85, found a job under the table, learned English. I worked for a few years in that bar restaurant in Fort Lauderdale, and then I made an offer. I had a $100,000 loan from my stepfather at 10%, and I've been stuck here since then. Normally, we start to see Canadians arriving toward the end of October, beginning of November. This year, we practically have none. Everybody that wanted to come right now, they either canceled or postponed their stay. The big question at this time right now is what's going to happen during the Christmas holidays and after. They just extended the closure of the land border, till December 21st. But I don't think nobody sees the border reopening at that time, especially before a big national get-together during the holidays. So I don't think nobody sees it being reopened at that point. People still can come by plane. The problem is a lot of them likes to come by car. If they are on vacation for 2 weeks and they choose to come to Florida or outside of Canada, they have to quarantine for another 2 weeks. For a lot of them, their job doesn't allow them to do that. I think the holiday season, we're going to have some tourists. We're going to have some of those snowbirds, but really not as many as we normally would. We got about 200 rooms altogether. I would say about 50 of them are rented long-term. So that leaves about 150 rooms available for tourists. And 150 rooms available for tourists, you just put two per room, that makes about 300 people. And we're not going to see that many people this year. They're all scared. I think people are afraid of the unknown. And what they hear about Florida here, all the numbers going up, scares them.
For the people that you do have coming, what are the safety precautions you're taking for them here?
It's still a working process. We're still talking about it. It's a small, down-to-earth place. I cannot be behind every customer and making sure that, you know, put Propel in their hands and all. I can't. It's just like people have to use their common sense. What we probably going to do with our snowbirds this winter, though, is like maybe provide them with like a bag or something where they can put their towels and hang it on the doorknob. So this way the maid don't have to come inside the room.
You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. You rely so much on these snowbirds for your year-round business. What has the pandemic done to your business health?
The big drop that we had last March when they all like left all at once, I lost $250,000 in revenue compared to the previous year for those 2 months. Since then, the local, you know, I had a stimulus plan that came in effect in May. So local business hasn't been that bad. So I would say my numbers are down between 10 and 15% per month since then. 30 to 40,000 less every month. So all those accumulation. The only thing that I can say that is good about it is it was the Trump years. So last year we had the best year that we ever had. So being a little short this year compared to the previous year, it's not that bad. Last year, we really had a good season until that mess started. It's the winter time that is questionable what's going to happen this coming winter. And the sad part is if we don't have those tourists coming back, I will have to look at turning some of those motels into long-term rentals.
Have you been happy with Governor DeSantis and how he's reopened restaurants, hotels, motels? Everything's sort of been reopening, the economy?
I'm very extremely happy with Governor DeSantis' decision to keep the state open. I think we're all grown ups, we're all adults, and I think it's up to each other to decide what is safe and what is not safe. I think we need to be informed, and we are. And taking our protection it's basically up to us. I got 5 children. Me and my wife, that makes it 7. And myself, I remember being very sick. Sometimes, I guess, in March. I went to see the doctor at that time. He told me that's not what it was. And my deep belief is probably what it was. I had another employee at the office that also got pretty sick to a point where he could not come to work for 2 weeks. And then he got better. And then he needed to pay his rent. He needed to live, he needed to support his family, and he wanted to come back to work. The problem is nobody at work wanted to see him back. And I don't want to deny him his job neither. It's just as an employer, what am I going to do? The guy is healthy. He doesn't have no symptoms or anything. He wants to work. I cannot keep him out of a job. And then it was back with us, and everything went fine and no more problems since then. When all the tourists left, it was very difficult for March and April. But as I said, when the stimulus got in effect, like May 1st, we started to get the locals back. And the business being down between 10 to 15% since then, we were able to keep all the staff working. So no layoff. The only thing that I'm concerned is, are the tourists going to come back this winter? If the Canadians are not coming, you got all the Americans from the north, Boston, New York, Detroit, Chicago, all those big cities, it's going to be cold for them too this winter. There's nothing that will stop those people to come in the area. Hopefully the lack of Canadians is going to be replaced by more Americans that wants to stay in Florida.
For the regulars that all come and are friendly together here every winter at the motel, aren't you merging a lot of bubbles? Isn't the idea for people to get together and meet new people and...
If you do want warm weather and you have difficulty with the language, you're going to try to stick together. There's hospital that speaks French. There's restaurant that speaks French. There's realtors, lawyers. There's a small French community here. And that makes those people feel secure. In regards to how to deal with the COVID, personal bubbles, that is up to everyone to enforce that and to see that it's being respected, reminding people to keep their distance.
That was motel owner Richard Clave speaking with WLRN's Katie Switalski-Munoz in Hollywood, Florida. And still to come, Florida retailers face the holiday shopping season, and they are urging you to buy local. You're listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Florida Roundup here on Florida Public Radio. Thanks again for listening. I'm Tom Hudson in Miami.
And I'm Melissa Ross in Jacksonville. Well, the pandemic has changed just about everything, right? Including the way we shop. Online shopping has soared this year, no surprise. But on this Black Friday, the state's retailers hope you'll continue to buy both online and in person. The pandemic means that overall retail sales are expected to take a hit this year. This season, there's also a new campaign out there to get Florida consumers to choose locally made products. For more about that, I spoke with Scott Shalley, president and CEO of the Florida Retail Federation. So tell us about the Retail Federation's Find It in Florida campaign. What's the message for shoppers you're trying to get out this holiday season?
Oh, we're just trying to really get everybody to support their neighbors. Florida's retailers account for 1 in 5 jobs, and the companies that invest in Florida and hire Floridians, they need your help in this difficult year. And it really comes down to supporting the local retailers, whether it's a big box or the small store. And no matter where you shop, we recognize that given the pandemic, a lot of people are going to shop online. And we just ask that you consider doing so with somebody who invests in Florida and has a presence in Florida.
So 1 in 5 jobs across the state depend on some kind of retail connection. And so many of those jobs have gone away. How critical is it for your organization, the Florida Retail Federation, that you preserve the ones that are still there?
Well, it's really critical. We had, as an industry, it was a tough summer. Many of our retailers were completely shut down for a month. And of course, that trickles down to household incomes and affects people's lives in a significant way. So the fourth quarter and the holiday season is going to be really critical for a lot of our retailers. And the retail community has gone to great lengths to provide a safe shopping experience and provide alternatives in terms of meeting the consumer where they want to be met and where they feel safe, whether it's shopping in the store, exercising appropriate safety protocols with distancing and mask and those sorts of things, or curbside delivery and, of course, the online option as well. So it's really, really important this time of year. And again, I feel strongly about our local retailers because they are the ones, whether it's the big box or the small store, that is supporting the community, paying taxes in the community, supporting the local Little League teams and those sorts of things. So we hope folks will keep that in mind as they make their shopping decisions.
Let's talk about the tech situation. As you pointed out, Scott, the retail sector has been so resilient all year, offering delivery, curbside, throwing up plexiglass in stores, contactless payment, all that stuff. And it's been such a challenge. And they do have one hand kind of tied behind their back when it comes to taxation. Can you talk a little bit about what's going on in the legislature? They're looking at the law that would require internet sales to also include a sales tax and out-of-state retailers as well. Why is that so important to level the playing field for your sector?
Well, it's critical not only to level the playing field, but to ensure that Floridians aren't put in a bad spot with regard to sales tax compliance. There's sort of a misunderstanding that sometimes when you purchase on the internet, you may not be charged a sales tax. Well, just because you're not charged at the time of purchase doesn't mean it's not owed. It is, in fact, owed. And there's a really onerous process that exists right now to where if a seller, a marketplace seller out of a foreign country or another state makes a sale and you purchase from them, that you're required to submit a form to the Department of Revenue with payment for those taxes. And many, many Floridians are not aware that that requirement exists. So in the last couple of years, there's been a legislative movement throughout the country to rectify that and to clean that up and to protect the consumer against unwittingly not paying their taxes. And every state in the country has moved forward with requirements for third-party sellers to collect the sales tax at the point of sale. So nobody likes to pay taxes. I get that, and I totally understand it. But this is a requirement that's in place, and it's cumbersome right now. And it also puts our local retailers at a disadvantage in terms of having a collection obligation, administrative obligation that doesn't exist for foreign competitors. So we're optimistic that the legislative leadership recognizes that inequity and hopefully will address it. We're really in a place budgetarily where there's no room for any money to fall through the cracks. Everything that's owed needs to be collected. So I think that folks would find the general consensus that this needs to be addressed.
Thanks so much. Scott Shalley, he's president and CEO of the Florida Retail Federation. Thanks so much, Scott.
Thank you for having me. Take care.
Daniel Broyles owns and runs Foreign Accents in Orlando with his wife. They sell furniture and decorations. And even though the store was closed for weeks in the springtime, business has picked up considerably, and he's looking forward to a strong holiday season. Daniel, welcome to the Florida Roundup. What kind of business are you expecting in your store for the holidays?
Actually, this year I'm expecting quite a bit of business, judging by the response we've had since things opened back up. It's been a fairly robust retail season for us.
Tell me a little bit more about that. How robust? How has it compared? Tell me how customers and clients are coming through and what are they looking for?
Our store, we do furniture, accessories. We also have jewelry and gift items. It's a fairly small store, but we've got a wide variety of products. So people come in for a variety of reasons, whether they're, you know, furnishing a home or just looking for a gift. I'd have to say we've been busier with our retail this year than typical once things opened back up and people started moving around more.
And to what do you attribute that?
I think it's the, you know, time they have had to spend at home and look around their homes and envision projects. So now they're coming in and looking for, you know, furnishings and accessories to work on their homes, and it's been very good for us. I know other businesses don't have that advantage, but that it's been working out well for our business.
You are listening to the Florida Roundup from Florida Public Radio. We're speaking with Daniel Broyles. He is the owner, along with his wife, of the retailer Foreign Accents in Orlando. They sell furniture and home decor. A lot of businesses, restaurants, bars, hospitality-oriented businesses would be envious of what you're telling us, don't you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. And I really feel for them. We work with a lot of them because we do a lot of custom furnishings and things. We work with the theme parks and with restaurants. And I really feel for those industries that are hit hard. And part of our business is working with them. We've seen a loss of probably about 35% of our business because of loss of projects with those industries.
So you have not been unscathed with the hospitality slowdown at all.
No, not at all. But the retail picking up a bit has softened the blow. But we'll probably be down about 25% this year overall, I would imagine, because of those loss of those projects. And I say loss, it's mostly a postponement, I would say.
Have you had to make difficult decisions to stay in business, even with that 25% drop in revenue?
You know, we've been in business since 96, so we've seen the ups and the downs.
You've seen a couple of recessions then.
Yeah. We've seen some bad times. So we've tried to, you know, prepare ourselves for that. And so we kind of, I would say we're being a little cautious, but actually we just expanded into some warehouse space in the past couple of months, took over and tripled the size of our business by taking over some warehouse showroom nearby. So we'd planned on doing it last year, which was one of our best years, actually was our best year to date. And we were anticipating even more this year, an increase beyond last year. And so we just went ahead and did what we'd planned on doing. And we're just hoping that it'll continue to improve.
Your store focuses on, as you mentioned, home decorations, furniture, some jewelry, oftentimes from overseas. Have you been able to find the supply that you traditionally would?
Yeah, there's been some interruptions, but they've been fairly brief. The shipping's been a little bit odd. You would think there would be more availability of equipment and things, but because of the domino effect of the supply chain being messed up with some products not being sold these days, you know, the shipments aren't there, so sometimes we can't find a container or a trailer when we need one. Just because the supply chain is out of sync. So it's delayed some of our shipments and sometimes we're, you know, forced to pay extra to get equipment. So some of those things have added to our costs this year, but it hasn't been substantial. It's, you know, all things considered, it's not bad at all.
How have the customers changed? You mentioned your business mix. You had a pretty significant part of it directed at the hospitality industry through the theme parks and restaurants. That can be kind of wholesale business, but those can be big tickets, right? When you're outfitting a restaurant, for instance, versus outfitting a living room.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we do a lot with Universal, so we were looking forward to working with them more on their park expansion. We just started that and got a little bit of work in on it, but before they had to, you know, put things on hold temporarily.
I imagine that the average receipt has gone down, but perhaps there's more of them this year. Is that accurate?
You know, I expected the exact same thing, but I would have to say that it's been as though people had no worries. It's completely different than the downturn in 2009. 10, you know, where it seemed more doom and gloom and people just didn't seem to have the any kind of optimism. There hasn't seemed to be that this time around. People seem to remain optimistic and they're shopping pretty much unhindered.
That was Daniel Broyles. He owns the retailer Foreign Accents in Orlando with his wife. They opened that furniture and home decor store in the mid-1990s.
That's our show for today. The Florida Roundup is produced by WJCT Public Media in Jacksonville and WLRN Public Media in Miami. Heather Schatz and Denise Royal are the producers.
Jason Zabka is the WLRN Director of Radio Programming, WLRN's Director of Radio Operations, and our technical supervisor is Peter Mertz. Engineering help each week from Doug Peterson, Charles Michaels, and Josh Torres. Our theme music provided by Miami jazz guitarist Aaron Libos at aaronlibos.com. Thanks for listening. I'm Tom Hudson.
And I'm Melissa Ross. Have a safe and happy holiday weekend.